This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting live worldwide. And today I'm broadcasting again from Central Europe. I'm in the homeland of our peoples, and it's really great to be here and to be able to get away from the ringing telephones and work on the writing that I have so long neglected. I'm away from students here. I'm away from ringing telephones. But one thing I'm trying to do is go ahead and make a verbal or a spoken edition of Jewish Supremacism, primarily the introduction or preface to the book. I have completed part one and part two, and today we'll do part three. You know, last broadcast, I talked about the fact that I am not a white supremacist. If anything, perhaps I'm a white preservationist. But I also believe in the right of all people on this planet to preserve their heritage, their way of life, their unique qualities and character that make them a distinct people. I believe that every nation, every people has that right on the planet, including Europeans. I also believe that Jews have that right. What I'm exposing with my book, Jewish Supremacism, is a strain of extreme Judaism, extreme supremacism that exists among the Jewish people. Not all Jews, but certainly they dominate the Jewish community. Judaism itself is a racial religion. I know a lot of you don't realize that, but listen on and research and read, and you'll learn exactly the truth about what I'm speaking. They are about the preservation of their own people, which is their right. The problem we have is the supremacist activities of the Jewish extremists who dominate so much of the American media and so much of the American political structure, as well as having incredible influence in media around the world. In the last section, I told you I was going to take up the issue of divide and conquer, and that's a very important issue in terms of the Jewish supremacist problem. How does a small minority in the world control a larger majority? And the answer to that, of course, is divide and conquer. Supremacist Jews fear and oppose all ethnic solidarity other than their own. In the Western nations, they consistently oppose all organizations seeking to preserve the interests and the heritage of Europeans. Likewise, in non-European nations, they consistently work to break down the solidarity and homogeneity of the prominent ethnic group. It is part of the Jewish supremacist modus operandi to foment diverse immigration and multiculturalism in every nation they reside in, except, of course, for Israel. As they see a squabbling, disunited society as an easy prey to their intense and well-organized efforts at control. Dr. Steven Steinlight, who I've already quoted, a former officer of the American Jewish Committee, puts it in amazingly blunt terms. Quote, for perhaps another generation, an optimistic forecast, the Jewish community will thus be in a position where it will be able to divide and conquer and enter into selective coalitions that support our agenda. Unquote. In America, not only have they worked to weaken the solidarity of European Americans, they actively opposed African American nationalist movements, such as Marcus Garvey's movement, and more recently, the Nation of Islam. Those black organizations simply desired to preserve their own heritage rather than to assimilate into a multicultural society. Jewish supremacists hypocritically want no one other than themselves to be conscious of their own heritage and common interests. They try to make other groups feel guilty for even having pride in their own culture. They paint ethnic pride and cohesion in other peoples as supremacist or hateful. There's an exception to that, of course, and that's when you have a minority group inside a majority nation as a way, again, to divide and conquer. So often they will support individual ethnic supremacies or ethnic nationalist viewpoints to cause this problem that might exist within the nation. You know, a pertinent example of this divide and conquer method can be seen in Palestine and Lebanon. Most Palestinians and Lebanese are Muslim, but significant numbers are Christian. Israel has actively promoted hatred and civil war between Christians and Muslims in the Mideast. One of the reasons that Ariel Sharon arranged for the slaughter of Muslim refugees by the Lebanese Falangist militia forces in 1982 was to promote bitter hatred and war among Israel's Arab enemies. The diaries of one of Israel's former prime ministers, Moshe Sheret, exposed the fact that this was one of Israel's main tactics. The destabilization of nations by encouraging massive multicultural, multiracial, multireligious immigration, as well as promotion of existing ethnic and religious divisions within nations, has been a long-practiced strategy of the Jewish supremacists. This attempt to break down their enemies' ethnic solidarity can be explained in the context of the Palestinian people. If Israel's displaced Palestinians fully assimilate in foreign lands with their host population, they thus lose their identity as Palestinians. They and their assimilated descendants are certainly not as likely to support the Palestinian cause. Jewish supremacists work as hard for the assimilation of other peoples as hard as they work against the assimilation of their own. While they attempt to break down other people's ethnic loyalty, Jewish supremacist forces in the media sponsor a chronic recital of historical anti-Semitism. Now, such a focus on anti-Semitism has two objectives. First, it heightens Jewish solidarity and worldwide support for Israel. And secondly, it stimulates collective Jewish hatred for the Gentile world and thus lessens assimilation. The recital of Gentile perfidy against Jews also protects them from Gentile criticism. For if anyone dares to criticize Jewish supremacism, he is painted as morally equivalent to the purveyors of the Holocaust. Another example of the great hypocrisy of the Jewish supremacists can be seen in the intermarriage issue. During his campaign for president, George Bush found himself excoriated by the press for speaking at Bob Jones University. That's an institution that opposes interracial dating and marriage. Of course, during the campaign, both George Bush and Al Gore made many obligatory speeches for many Jewish organizations. The irony is that every synagogue in America and every major Jewish organization vigorously opposes intermarriage of Jews with non-Jews. Of course, this blatant double standard finds no mention in America's supposedly fair and free press. Such exposure would not be good for Jewish public relations. There are thousands of books and movies, many written, produced, and marketed by supremacist Jews that condemn doctrines and movements of racial or ethnic supremacy among non-Jews. Few books, however, dare to examine the world's oldest, most powerful, and virulent form of ethnic supremacism, Jewish supremacism. It seems that if these supremacist Jews were honest, they could better write about the supremacy they know the most about, their own. Of course, not all Jews are supremacist any more than all Germans were Nazis during the Hitler era, but the fact remains that organized Jewry has pursued a successful agenda that has amassed incredible power in modern times. With the creation of Israel, they have established the most ethnically supremacist nation on earth, Even more importantly, they have managed to acquire enormous power in many of the major governments of the world, especially the United States. And today they thoroughly dominate the world news and entertainment media. My well-documented chapter about the media will prove that their power is far greater than you might suspect. Those at the centers of political influence in the United States and other nations are aware of the intense power of the Israeli lobby. The Jewish lobby is the one lobby in Washington that no American politician dares to forthrightly oppose. It should disturb any patriotic American to think that the most powerful lobby in America's Congress is in the service of a foreign nation. The extent of Jewish power is precisely why the general public is unaware of it. For those who know it also know the high price they would pay for openly discussing it. In America, doing so can result in damage of one's reputation or even the loss of business or employment. Such truth-telling can result in threats, intimidation, and even physical attacks by groups such as the Jewish Defense League. The Anti-Defamation League, a group that supposedly opposes racial and religious supremacism, is always busily accusing their critics of racial, religious, and ethnic intolerance, while they themselves ardently defend and deny Israel's blatant supremacism. This Jewish supremacist group can ruin the business or the political career of almost anyone they choose. Even more dangerously, Jewish supremacists have now been successful in imprisoning their critics in many European nations. They cannot, as of yet, freely assassinate their critics in Western countries, as they have hundreds of Palestinian writers, poets, and clerics across the Arab world. In today's Europe, however, simply quoting the supremacist statements of Jewish leaders can land one in prison. There are hundreds of dissidents in prison at this moment who dared to simply speak or write openly about Jewish ethnic intolerance. Although the media constantly allege that unlike the Nazis or the communists, we have free speech in America and Europe, there are citizens of European nations right now in prison for simply contesting the politically correct Jewish versions of historical events such as the Holocaust. A prime example, of course, is the worldwide famed author David Irving, whose books are found in almost every library of the world, who's now sitting in an Austrian prison with a 3-year sentence for simply uttering an opinion about an historical event that took place over 50 years ago. Jewish supremacists have made an intense effort to weaken the sense of ethnic awareness and loyalty among Europeans. In our modern media's political correctness, it is considered hate speech for Europeans to speak about their love for their heritage and express their desire to preserve it. As a European American, I do believe that my people have a right to preserve their way of life. At the same time, I recognize that natural right for all different peoples and nationalities of the earth. For instance, how odd it is that the Palestinians, who have been ethnically cleansed from their own nation and denied their most basic human rights, are so often characterized as anti-Semites and terrorists, while the anti-Gentile Jewish supremacists who have terrorized them, tortured them by the hundreds of thousands, and stolen their entire country are little criticized by the world press. Palestinians and those in the Arab world need to understand that the source of their own plight comes from the fact that European Americans have been prevented from defending their own national interests and heritage, just as the Palestinians have been so prevented. Palestinians will never find liberation in their nation until European Americans find liberation in America from Jewish supremacism. Although I'm certainly an activist for European Americans, I respect and applaud every people who desire to preserve their own way of life, and even more vitally, their very existence as an ethnic entity. To me, ethnic survival is the most basic of human rights. It also is a fundamental human right for people to live under a government and also a news and entertainment media that reflect their own basic values, traditions, social and economic interests. A nation under the power of an alien and destructive mass media is equally oppressed as one under the power of a foreign occupying government. The increasing globalism of the 21st century, driven on by Jewish supremacists, will continue to decrease the choices and freedoms of all people. Moreover, it will endanger the preservation of individual cultures, traditions, values, religious beliefs, and ethnic identities. The end result of globalism will be an enormous world government, one that will crush freedom and diversity, as a steamroller would a flower. The idea that government should represent its own people and not any foreign power is the driving principle of the Declaration of Independence and America's nationhood. The right of a people to have a government of their own and for their own interests. The preamble of the Constitution of the United States puts it succinctly when it talks of government, quote, for ourselves and our posterity. In America, the Jewish domination of key United States government positions is amazing. During President Clinton's administration, the leading Israeli newspaper, Maariv, described warm Jews, meaning Jews loyal to the interests of Israel, as holding critically important positions on the United States National Security Council. Maariv stated that 7 of its 11 members are, quote, warm Jews. The beginning of the 21st century saw Madeleine Albright as head of the State Department, George Tenet leading the CIA, William Cohen as Secretary of Defense, and Sandy Berger as Chairman of the National Security Council. All are Jewish. Jewish supremacism was primarily researched and written during the Clinton administration, and as such offers a sliver of historical time. But do not imagine that the inordinate Jewish power diminished under the administration of President George Bush. His presidency began with fewer Jews in the most visible positions, but the underlying government bureaucracy that spans different administrations is as Jewish as ever. A good example is Alan Greenspan, who has served as chairman of the powerful Federal Reserve for many administrations of both parties, and the new head of the Federal Reserve, which seems to have filled an absolutely incorrigible Jewish appointment in the United States government. In the National Security Council, there has been increasing Jewish consolidation from the first days of the Bush presidency. Richard Sale of UPI in February 28, 2003, wrote about Zionist Elliot Abrams. A staff shakeup at the National Security Council is likely to mean the United States will take a harder pro-Israel stance in the Middle East. To continue with a quote, Elliot Abrams, the controversial former Reagan administration official who President Bush last December appointed to the NSC to take charge of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, has removed several staff members who were regarded as even-handed on the issue, unquote. Jewish supremacism will show specifically how Jewish supremacists have used their political and media power to impose their will on America and other nations through their agenda that clearly opposes the true interests of those nations. An excellent example is the American and British pursuit of the Iraq War. It's no accident that the two nations most under the influence of Jewish supremacists, the United States and Britain, launched a military invasion against Iraq in March of 2003. In going to war against Iraq, America fought against itself. It launched a war certain to cause more hatred and terrorism against the United States, cost hundreds of billions of dollars and will inflict terrible damage to the American economic and diplomatic interests at home and abroad. Even more importantly, it was a callous betrayal of the brave fighting men of the American military, who should never be put in harm's way other than for the true security and freedom of the American people. The most famous, influential, and long-time proponent of the war is the ardent Zionist Richard Perle, chairman of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board. Perle and his wife are also founders of JINSA, the Jewish Institute for National Security. Perle and a well-networked cabal of Jewish neocons have become the primary propagandists for the war. They included many former prominent Marxists such as Norman Podhoretz, who opposed the Vietnam War but morphed into a conservative hawk for Israel. Podhoretz has served as editor of Commentary, the magazine of American Jewish Committee. Among the Jewish neocons were Paul Wolfowitz, Bill Kristol, David Wormser, Douglas Feith, Elliot Abrams, Paul Frum, Henry Kissinger, and even the former Marxist and Black Panther supporter David Horowitz. Back in 1996, Perle was behind a report entitled A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm. It called for war in Iraq, yet it was not written for the United States, but for the incoming Israeli Likud Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Once the Israelis decided to create an American war against Iraq, they then had to manufacture the rationale for the war. So they trumpeted their reasons why America and the world had to go to war and their Jewish allies in the mass media collaborated. Of course, Israel was far more guilty of every alleged transgression than was Iraq, but the Jewish supremacists in the media would never draw the obvious comparisons. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of part three. And tomorrow in part four, I will talk about the reasons and justifications of why go to war against Iraq. And I will show to you how Israel was guilty far more in every justification for going to war against Iraq than was Iraq. And how Israel has been the one nation in the Middle East that has committed, as a government, terrorist acts against the United States. Iraq never did. Israel has an easily verifiable and proven events. I look forward to being with you tomorrow and continuing with the conclusion of the preface to Jewish supremacism. This has been David Duke. Please use your computer keyboards and spread this message and this broadcast to your friends and neighbors around your city, state, nation, and world. Thanks, and I'll see you again tomorrow.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.